Chapter 11, Course and Self-Management. The ability to manage your state during the 4 or 5 hours that you're out there is of crucial importance. When I really honestly analysed my rounds in the early days, I realised that I was doing a number of key things wrong and that they were potentially costing me a lot of shots. My main playing partner during that year was extremely helpful in guiding me in this area, and I learnt a huge amount from him. He plays a lot of golf on a lot of golf courses and has done for years, so his grasp of how to manage himself in difficult situations was invaluable. There are several key skills to saving shots on the course without having to make any improvements in your shot making. Make sure you use them. Number 1. Play one shot at a time. And a quote from Tiger Woods, "It will always be the ball and me." And again, "You've got to stay patient, stay in the moment, keep grinding. You never know what can happen, and it's turned out well." So it's pretty tough to say that without it sounding like a relentless cliche along the drive for show, putt for dough lines. But this is the number one on my list for a reason. It's a skill that seems to be completely forgotten by most golfers. You are playing one shot at a time. Do not play your partner. Do not play the course. And do not even play the hole, or simply, and certainly, don't play with the final score in your mind. Simply play one shot after another. And when you're done with that shot, move on and start again. Erase the previous shot from your mind, or anchor it as necessary, and start again. Many of the world's best golfers refuse to watch the scoreboard during their rounds and refuse to know scoring information from their caddies. It's a great principle, and one that you should adopt as much as possible. It's one that I still struggle with, if I'm honest, but it is so, so important. Number 2, on your way to the course. You should be very clearly imagining and visualising that perfect first shot, even in the car as you drive there. This sounds daft, but if you can really feel the sensation of a perfect first tee drive, it will enormously help with first tee nerves. Get the feeling in the car and then use your anchor to reinforce it. Number 3, get there early and get warmed up. In an ideal world, you'd arrive in enough time to hit some balls in the range and get comfortable with the swing for the day. If you're playing at a course with a range or a practice area, you want to slowly warm up and stretch and then work your way gradually up the bag from the wedge to the driver. Make sure you anchor every great shot and immediately dismiss any bad ones. Your last shots should be using the club that you're going to use in the first tee and going through your whole pre-shot routine. If you hit a great shot, anchor it. If you don't, immediately erase it from your memory. Number 4. Make sure your bag has everything that you could need. I realised very on that I was ruining rounds for a variety of trivial and petty issues. Things were arising that were making me feel a little uncomfortable in the back nine, and this was affecting the scores. I have a few allergies, so sore eyes were causing me a problem quite often. Likewise, sometimes my golf shoes were giving me blisters and I was often thirsty, hungry, or in pain from my arthritic hips. Now I have extremely clear rituals about how I play. I always have at least 2 bottles of water, with an emergency one stashed away in another pocket, as well as a couple of power bars, which cause less energy spiking than chocolate. I carry ibuprofen for my hips, which I take in the 6th hole to preempt the pain that usually starts in the 9th hole, but still allows me to be pain-free, or relatively so, on the 18th. I also bring plasters and eye drops. I always carry extra tees, ball markers, pencils, pitch mark repairers, lots of balls, cards, my notebook, spare gloves, in fact 2 in case it's wet. Now, I'm not naturally a very organised person, so this goes against many other areas of my life, but I've discovered that this attention to detail helps me to score better, so that tips the balance. It helps me to click into being an organised person, since I focus on the very real hip pain, the discomfort of sore eyes, or the embarrassment, particularly in match play, of having to borrow a marker. Number 5. Look like a golfer. In my early days, I'd rush to the course and simply play in my work clothes or even my jeans. They were allowed at Blackwood. Very quickly, particularly when playing with my regular playing partner, who always dresses immaculately and like a golfer, I felt that I was doing myself a disservice. I consistently talk to clients or managers about making sure that they look the part, in an effort to influence and direct employees, and I realised that this was vital in the course too. So looking like a golfer not only makes you feel more confident about your own game, but shows your opponents that you mean business. And again, this is very useful in match play. But it also applies in all situations. I even used to make sure that I dressed like a golfer for a range session, since it changed my state of mind and helped me to focus better on the task in hand. Number 6, remove distractions. What that primarily means is turning off the phone. If you should be working and are sneaking out for a few holes, then change the message in your phone to say that you're in a meeting, but we'll call them back as soon as you're through. Who cares if that's a meeting with bunker and a few fairways? All that matters is that you can properly switch off from the task in hand and focus. Watch what you eat, number 7. In Tiger's book, How I Play Golf, he talks about how very early on in his career, he was a bit of a burger and a Coke fanatic. He quickly realised that this wasn't serving him well and went down the banana or apple, energy bar and water route. Initially, I just made sure I had a drink and some chocolate and realised that this was still giving me fatigue around the 15th hole. So very quickly, I adopted Tiger's model almost to the letter. I make sure that I'm never hungry, but never stuffed. I have something to eat in the 6th tee and then go around the 10th or 11th. There is almost a ritual among amateur golfers to wait until the 10th tee before you eat something, but I maintain that this is too long. By that stage, you are generally already hungry and thirsty, and will have walked several miles. If you treat the round as 3 sixes, as opposed to 2 nines, you will help yourself stay well-fueled and not end up limping around the last few holes dreaming of beer and a burger. This is common sense, really, and you'd imagine that at the very highest level in golf, they would all be properly dealing with their nutrition and energy levels in the same way. But strangely, that simply isn't the case. I watched a practice round at the Ryder Cup and was amazed to see a highly prominent European golfer ask the captain for a Kit Kat because he was hungry. The slightly sad thing about this story is that the player in question is one of those best player never to have won a major nominees, and it seems bizarre to think that someone at this level simply doesn't apply the lessons that Tiger so clearly does. Lessons that Tiger got at age 21, which have subsequently helped him to fill a room full of major trophies. Number 8, create a bubble. This technique was taught to me by David Walters, the incredible guy who helped me out so much in the last week of the challenge. David works extensively with soldiers who have returned from combat with horrendous cases of post-traumatic stress disorder and have seen terrible scenes of death and killing. His experience means that dealing with a bit of golfer trauma was hardly much of an issue for him. The technique is useful, really, when you are playing with partners or in situations where there are lots of outside influences. So if your partner is having a bad day and is ranting or raving about his game and doing club-throwing histrionics, you can be easily distracted by this. It's hard not to try and empathise with them. And it's also hard not to say the wrong thing. Likewise, if you're playing match play and your opponent is using a few unpleasant gamesmanship techniques, you can easily lose your focus. Many people struggle badly with first tee nerves and perhaps a small gathering of people waiting to play after you. All of these situations can be alleviated with the bubble. What you do is the minute that you feel any negative outside influences, imagine a bubble covering you completely. I like to imagine that there is an actual sort of a whooshing noise as the bubble covers me. The bubble totally isolates me from the outside world, and the only thing in there with me is myself and all the positive golfing experiences that I've had in the past. I quickly run through a few past successes, with the specifics varying depending on the shot that I'm going to play. So if it's a putt, then I just think of the previous great putts, and if it's a drive, I imagine previous booming drives. This reverses any negativity that may have been experienced and allows me to reboot back to my normal positive self. When I've hit the shot, I then allow the bubble to disappear or leave it on, but allow some outside communication to come. It sounds daft, and I only use it on rare occasions when I'm being put off by partners or opponents, but it is very useful and I highly recommend it. Number 6. Get honest and totally realistic with yourself. Understand the concept of luck. It's important to realise that very few of us are blessed with the scrambling skills of a Seve Ballesteros or a Phil Mickelson. It took me a long time to grasp this concept, and a lot of frustration from my partner as he watched me end up with double bogeys after attempting ludicrous shots that it was highly unlikely that I was going to make, in the vain attempt to pull off a magic shot and save par or even get a birdie. One day, after yet another attempt to thread a ball through the branches of a tree had gone wrong, and my ball had bounced out onto the fairway a few feet in front of me, he turned and slowly asked me if I felt that I'd been lucky or not lucky when hitting the ball with the ball hitting the tree. Incredulous, I answered that I'd been unlucky. Of course I was unlucky. That ball had hit the tree, for goodness sake. If I'd been lucky, it would have sailed through and landed where I wanted it to land. He then stopped and slowly and very methodically said, "No, John, this is where you have got this thing all wrong. You were very lucky to get away with that shot and be on the fairway at all. You deserve to have it bounce off and into the stream there, or even into the deep rough over there. You have to learn to take your punishments when they come and to stop playing these ludicrous shots." This was a real wake-up call for me. I was taking the whole concept of positive thinking one stage too far. Everyone, even the best guys in the world, end up in the woods sometimes or in the rough with huge obstacles in front of them. The key is to take your punishment and hopefully pull back a par through great short game or putting. And if you do get a bogey, then take it with good grace and simply expect to pull back with a birdie later on. So the mantra is, if in doubt, get out. So be totally realistic about your skills. Don't try and outdrive your partners or bend balls around corners if you simply don't have the skills. Don't attempt to thread the ball through tiny gaps in the trees, or attempt a floating wedge over a 200-foot high tree. Some things are beyond us, and you'll really improve your scoring if you're this kind of player and can just get a bit realistic. Number 10, manage the wind. Again, this is another area where my main playing partner helped me tremendously. He was an extremely canny wind player. And every time I'd step up to the ball on a windy day, he'd ask, "Okay, how many clubs is that wind?" For months, I was always underestimating and allowing the inno macho golfer to think that it was a one-club wind when it was really two, or two when it was three. Fully grasping this concept and being entirely realistic can help your scoring tremendously on a windy day. Number 11. Don't underclub. The golf magazines regularly ask touring pros whether either one or of two questions, and invariably the answer is the same. The questions are, what mistakes do you see amateur golfers make most when you play with them in pro-ams? And what is the one piece of advice that you'd give to the average golfer? They answer consistently, don't under-club. Take enough club to get to the green. Being a macho golfer at heart is something that I used to do. I would consistently underestimate how many yards into the green the flag was, or trying to thrash the cover off of a 9-iron when a properly struck 8 would actually be the right club. Most amateur golfers take very little heed of the distance markers on the course. And very often you'll find that even on their own course they don't know if the markers are to the middle or to the front of the green. When I visit any strange course, I always buy a course map, if available, and ask in the professional shop what kind of markers they have, what type of markers they have, and whether they are to the front or to the middle of the green. This is an incredibly rare thing for amateurs to do, and this one tip alone could save you two or three shots in each round, easily.